Evening, one and all. A Tuesday, another week. Yes, it's August. I know. Where's the summer gone? Well, it's still here. Here in Connecticut, anyway. But it's not quite the hundreds and 90s and stuff we've had the last few weeks. Nice sort of 80 with not quite so much humidity today. But I am here, and so is my guest. Now, it's great to have guests like my one tonight that are returning guests, because we can catch up with what's been going on with them. And we can find out a bit more as well, because today is sort of like a bit of Back to the Future, but we'll find out about that in a minute. But my guest today, what can I tell you? She is an international award-winning author, and she writes mystery stories with her heroine, Austin Starr. Yes, she was on in May. I know, doesn't seem that long ago, but she was, wasn't she? But I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Kay Kendall. Hi, Kay, how are you doing?
I'm fine and delighted to be back. I had such a good time talking to you in May. So
well, it's good to have you back. And I know we sort of hinted about this other book that was coming out when we were discussing in May. But first off, let's sort of, you know, people who didn't hear the show, a bit about you, because you're sort of into the 60s a little bit, shall I say. You know, like myself, in fact, I think we talked last time that well, it's 50 years for Woodstock this year, which means it must be 50 years to the Isle of Wight next year. And I saw Dylan at the Isle of Wight 50 years ago next year.
Lucky you. Yeah.
Well, I vaguely remember bits of it, but I definitely remember him being on the stage. But, you know, it was those sort of concerts. And it wasn't like a long sort of a couple. It was the equivalent of a British version of Woodstock, basically. It was great. And I know, you know, even in two, if I remember right, the titles and bits in your book are sort of Dylan-linked.
Yes, my first two books are Desolation Row is the first one, and it's set in the fall of 1968. And the second one is right back, it's right before Woodstock, the Manson murders had just happened. So anybody who's gone to see the Quentin Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, will love my second book, I think, which is Rainy Day Women, another Dylan song.
There you go.
And that is set in rainy Vancouver and rainy Seattle, and it's about women because it's women's lib and some people not being really happy with women's lib. So it's all very current now.
Well, I bet. I mean, 68, well, 69, I think, was the year I sort of, I was 17 in 69. So 69, I reckon, was one of the best years, apart from, you know, well, 66 when we won the World Cup in England, of course, which is, but those were different years. The summers seemed longer, and everybody was sort of waking up to new ideas and new ways, and the stress didn't seem there so much as it is these days. But I guess everybody will say that. You always remember the good things and that.
Well, I think maybe our parents weren't so happy, but we as teens were pretty darn happy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We our parents, the world and
our parents
rock
had
and roll.
No idea what was going on, our parents. I remember, God, who was it? It might have been the Rolling Stones, or it could have been the Pretty Things being on the television. My mother came in. They're disgusting. Get them in the bath at once.
Oh my goodness! My husband went home from college, and he had a hat on, and he had long hair, and his dad would not let him in the house.
Really?
He took his hat off. Yeah.
Wow.
And his dad was you know, a Canadian World War II vet, spent 2 years in England and then 2 years fighting on the continent. So, you know, definitely the greatest generation, but had very strong views about long hair and hats.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's like always, you know, it's a rebellion against what's gone before. You go back to the First World War, right through and before that, you know, to the 40s, 20s, whatever. And it is, you know, things have changed, things are different, and that's how it is. It's always, oh, I don't want to be the same. And you know, and unfortunately, in some ways, the generation, perhaps not the sort of millenniums, but the ones after that, it's the same as, well, I'm not going to have my children suffer through what I did. I'm, I, you know, they're not going to be without, sort of thing. And of course, you end up with spoilt kids and, you know, no respect and stuff like that. But it's just how it goes. You know,
yeah.
Each generation.
Cycles through.
Yeah, it cycles through, as you say. Now, we talked before about, you know, Austin Starr, our female detective. Great, great, great stuff working through these mystery series. But now, as I said at the beginning, we're sort of going back, because this is your new book, After You've Gone, is actually a prequel with Austin Starr's grandmother in.
Yes, Austin Starr's grandmother, and her name is Wally. She also has a boy's name. She was named for her father, the judge, Walter, but she's called Wally. And it's set in 1923 in a small town, Texas, that I've named Gunmetal. There is not one, but I think that sounds very Texas. I live in Texas and so on, so I know whereof I speak. And I'm fond of it, but I know, you know, there are issues. Anyway, it's 1923, and she's 23 years old. And a relative, a long-gone relative, is running from his employers, who are rum runners, and he drives booze around Texas during Prohibition. And something goes wrong, and he comes back home after 20 years, and something bad happens, and she's convinced it's a crime, not an accident. And so she starts the family trend of being an amateur sleuth. And, of course, two generations later, her granddaughter, Austin Starr, comes along, does the same thing, and the new book I'm going to write will be the fourth mystery, and it will be another Dylan song, Tangled Up in Blue.
Oh, right. Yep.
And the granddaughter and the grandmother are going to solve the crime together. It's a family, another family issue. And I've just written a novella, but it's not out yet.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to introduce a new character, and she's going to turn up in the fourth book and be Austin's daughter-in-law. So a lot of strong women with male names. This is Sammy.
Right.
And they're just kind of doing what they want, but staying within bounds. I mean, they're not terribly wild, but they're very bold.
Right. Because, I mean, you know, you go back to the 20s, and a woman, you know, like the grandmother, like Wally. You know,
Wally. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were there. They were, you know, starting a new world. It was,
yes, and this was like in 1923, the first two U.S. governors who were female were elected.
Oh, really? And that long ago? Wow.
Yeah. In Montana, 1 week, and then Texas the next week. And women got the vote in America in 1920. I think it was 1919 in England. But it was pretty much the First World War that showed that the women could really step up to the plate when all the guys were off in the trenches.
That's it. I mean, you know, up until then, you know, women in factories and doing men, you know, working on the farm and all this sort of stuff, the land girls and that. I mean, it was never heard of, you know, well, it was heard of in the family farm, but not in, you know, taking the place of the men. It just wasn't heard of.
And they didn't want you to take the place of the men.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but actually after World War II, there was this big campaign that the women all had to go back to the house because the guys coming home wanted their jobs back. You know, so these big, big societal shifts can really be quite something if you take the long view.
Right. So, you know, our heroine in After You've Gone, the grandmother, is it sort of in an instinct in her, you think, to sort of go down this path, to sort of start delving into this stuff?
She's extremely curious, wants to know what's really happened, and when she sees like an anomaly, something that doesn't quite fit, she wants to know why that thing happened. And she's a great fan of Sherlock Holmes,
mm-hmm.
and she's just read her first Agatha Christie in 1923. She just read her first one and she liked it, and she thinks maybe that author has staying power. That's a little inside joke.
Right.
Agatha Christie goes on and sells millions and millions of books. But she just, it's a natural instinct. And because her mother died early, her dad kind of let her do what she wanted to do, and she had two aunts. One of them coddled her and was like a suffragette and said, go do what you want, and the other one's a little more prim.
Right.
And the prim one is still alive in this book, and they go off on a road trip together, and we find out there's more going on with that prim woman than...
Really?
That's Aunt Ida. And everybody loves Aunt Ida. She starts out kind of, you think, oh, what a witch. And then she kind of, there's more there than meets the eye. So I get, I had great fun writing this book. The ones in the 60s were passion pieces. There were things I wanted to say about the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had the feeling that I needed to write those two books, one about the war and the other one about women's lib at the beginning in the 60s. And I wanted to get those out of me, and then I would see what was down underneath that might be a little bit more fun to read and to write.
Did you have to sort of do a lot of checking up about the rum running and the sort of things that were going on?
I did. I knew a fair amount because I have degrees in history, and I think about history a lot anyway. So I read historical things, but I had to check, dates and a couple of things. I mean, there were some there were run-ins with the Coast Guard that were off the coast of Galveston, Texas, and that was very good timing. Now you could use that for my book.
Right.
So I did a little bit, but not an awful lot, because I kind of had the basis to begin with. There are other periods of history that I would consider, except I know that I don't know so much, and I would just, I would really, really have to re-educate myself.
Right.
And that just didn't sound like a lot of fun to me.
Right. Now, I just, a lot of people, sometimes you wonder about a prequel, whether, the people who have read the others can fit in, will sort of follow it through to a prequel to bring other characters in. But looking at the reviews and that, people really seem to like it and the introduction of Wally.
Yes, they do. And it's basically what you call in the trade a standalone, because you don't have to know anything about the previous books, because it's like 50 years, I can't do it in my head, almost 50 years apart.
Mm.
And, of course, the grandmother doesn't know she's going to have a granddaughter in the 60s who's going to be solving mysteries, too. So it's a standalone mystery.
Yeah.
And so it can be just read that way. And, of course, I hope, and I have found this a lot, people will say, oh, I love this one. Now I'm going to go back and read the other two.
That's what you need, isn't it? That's
exactly.
There you go. But it's interesting that the one you're working on, not the novella, but the other one you're working on, brings them full circle. So they're sort of joined. They're sort of Holmes and Watson almost, that you've got.
Right.
You've got these back. Is that something you planned, or is it just how it sort of came together for you?
There are some characters that I enjoyed writing about, and they're like sidekick older women, and I put them in, and then as I'm writing the middle of the book, they just kind of take off.
Yeah,
and that's what Aunt Ida did. And there's a woman in the second book, Rainy Day Women, who is a Russian woman who came out of the Soviet Union and is staying with her brother, who is Austin's Russian history professor. And that Soviet woman, she has a Makarov pistol, and she seems very crusty, but, she just kind of, she's a very useful woman. So I started thinking of what I could do to bring her back into the fourth book. And, this is a lot of fun because my mind is always whirring. And if it doesn't have anything to sink its teeth into, it just worries. And that's no good. So if I'm planning some fiction and I'm moving these people around at my whim, it's just a lot of fun. And I always want the reader to have a good time because, this is not literary fiction. This is a whodunit.
Right.
And if they pick up a little mystery, a little history, with the mystery. That's great.
So, oh, I like that.
But they need to enjoy it.
Yes, indeed. I totally agree with you. You know, you're enjoying a book and you're educating yourself without really knowing that you are. I think that's the ultimate.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I love history, but I'm past the stage where I want to sit down and read a textbook.
Right. No, I mean, I like all the old seafaring stuff, Alexander Kent and Patrick O'Brien and all that sort of stuff. And,
right.
You know, I love reading it because it's an adventure, you know. But at the same time, I know about, you know, events that happened. I mean, it's the same with doing this show. I can tell you about, I don't know, the Three Rivers Flood and the Quilts of G's Bend and all this sort of stuff that happened in America that Americans wouldn't know about because I've had this education on the show, you know, talking to some great authors. And I think that, you know, it's great to do that.
You don't have to study, you just pay attention and you pick it up.
You pick it up,
and it's fun. But if you sit down and say, oh, I'm going to read about those quilts, I need to find out. And then you think, no, I don't want to do that. But, you know, if you have a curious mind and you're just alive to what's going on, I think it's great fun. Now, some people don't care about history.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care how a car engine works.
Right.
I mean, and I get that. That's fine. To each his own.
But it's right. I mean, if somebody tells me, oh, you're going to sit and read a book about quilts, making quilts. Seriously?
Yeah, exactly.
But when I sort of read that book and the story and everything like that, it was fascinating. You know, it really was. But, you know, to sit and say, you're going to read a book about people making quilts. No, no.
Not Not in a million years.
No.
That's right.
It's true.
That's right. What I like to do, actually, is, I mean, everybody has their own ways of escaping, I think, into another reality that makes them happy. And for me, I can go back in history because I know how the plot turns out. I know who wins World War I and World War II and so on.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of set order, and within that you have the mystery. And usually in mysteries, a lot of things turn out okay, order is reestablished.
Right.
And that kind of makes you feel all right with the world. These days, I don't want to read about CSI techniques.
Right.
I don't want to read about serial killers or terrorists or anything like that. I have to go farther back because I have enough stuff happening in the news that I don't want to, you know, I want to get out of that.
Right, indeed, yeah.
And for that, I got to go back to at least, I don't know, 1980.
Right. Well, one thing that does show, you know, with the 60s and then back to the 20s and things like that is that there's a pattern to human nature, and you show that very, very good with, you know, the way you go through these different characters. Is that something that you set out to do, or is it just you sort of say, yeah, these people sort of work the same way, it's just human nature?
I think that the pattern has come out kind of accidentally. In many ways, most of my, so now I've written, there's the Austin character, there's her grandmother Wally, and now I've written about Sammy, who's going to be a daughter-in-law. And they display a lot of the same characteristics. They're a little different, and their times are different. But sort of the motivation underneath them is pretty similar. And that, I think, has been accidental.
Right. Okay. So it just came out, it's there, and you were able to pick it up, you know, accidentally in that way. You were whether subconsciously or what, you were able to do it, which I think is great.
Yeah, I think often there's a lot of subconscious going on.
Oh, too right.
You're at the top thinking of this, and you're not thinking about what's deep underneath, and then, you know, a couple of months later, you'll think, well, blimey, look at that.
It's
really kind of fascinating.
Do you know, it's funny. I go back and occasionally I pick up my YA book and sort of read through it. And I'm reading through it. And I don't remember writing that. That's not words I use. Who wrote that? You just don't know. It's all subconscious sort of thing, as you say.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to bring up the amazing covers on the books because, they're two-tone, well, three-tone, you know, one-tone background and black and white, or tones of black and white, but with the background tone. They are just attract your attention straight away. And this one, after you've gone, again, another great one, in a sort of purpley, cerise-y sort of colour, but great stuff with the character there and that. Is that something you choose, or is it with the publishers?
I have been able to, I would say 90% of each cover has been me.
Wow.
We've talked about it. And because I'm with, now, if I were with one of the big publishers, I would have 5% input.
Right.
But because my publisher is smaller and he runs it kind of like a creative cooperative, we talked about the first cover and I said, this is what I'd like to do. And then he said, go over here and look at this photo archive and let's see what we can do. And then once we set, and then I picked the photograph, and then he had the graphic artist design the cover with that photograph, mm-hmm. and that kind of set the template for the other three. So the first two used the same model.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the same, definitely the same model, yeah.
Yeah, so then it was a little tricky to get the grandmother, because it had to be something that looked like it was in the family of the Austin Star series, but she couldn't look like a hippie.
No.
23. And I looked at all of these pictures of flappers and nothing worked, but there was this one photograph and I thought, that's it. And she looks, if I say sexy, it's almost sort of too hard nosed, but
right.
She's very appealing and
yeah.
She's definitely sensual. And the template she works into, and it's just, I don't know, I just love it. And then I say, I want this color.
Yes.
Of, you know, and each one has a different color.
Right.
And of course, obviously, the Tangled Up in Blue
had to be a blue, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we bought the photograph for that one.
Oh, right.
2 or 3 years ago. Because I was afraid that the woman who was the model for the first two, that her stuff would disappear.
Ah.
So I have rights to that. So we know what we're going to do.
Now, see, there's thinking ahead, see? Listen to that, people.
Yeah.
You got a cover, you like the cover, and you're thinking about another one. Snap the pictures up quick.
Yeah, that's right.
But
there was a very, very famous author from California, forgetting his name anyway. I met him at a conference and it was my first book, and he looked at her and he said, that cover, and he's practically drooling, and but he's a nice man, so he was very sweet, and he said, she's very fetching. And I thought, that's an author for you. There's a writer. He says she's fetching. I thought that was so cute.
I think didn't Steve Berry do some write up for you or something?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He gave me a very nice write up that's on the back cover,
right.
For this book, After You've Gone. He really liked it.
Yeah.
And I have the front cover is by the author of Rambo, all the Rambo books.
Okay.
David Morrell.
Yep. Well, it's been fascinating chatting to you, as it was indeed last time. I really enjoyed us having our chat. But what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so that you can tell everybody where they can find more about you and all your books, Kay. So over to you.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Barry. I do a lot on Facebook, and my author page is Kay Kendall Author. And I'm also on there on my personal page, and it's you can look up Kay Kendall, and I'm in Texas. So those are places you can find me. And then also my writing page is austinstar.com.
Oh, okay.
And Austin is spelled A-U-S-T-I-N, and the star has a double R at the end.
Okay.
And you can find my books at all the normal online places, and you can go to your bookstore and get them ordered, or, you know, obviously order them online. I would love it if people would take a look at them, and do write me and tell me what you think online. I love talking to readers. I have one reader who I've never met. She lives in Pennsylvania, and she has read out loud to all three of all three books to her cats.
Wow!
She has 11 cats, and three of them... Three of them will sit and listen to her as she has read all of my books out loud to them. I say it's the Lit Kit Club.
Yeah, well, there you go. I wonder how the rabbits would do if you sat and read to your rabbits.
Well, now I hadn't thought about that. I have three rabbits, remember.
Yeah.
And I should try that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know. To get cats to sit still is hard enough, but I don't know. A rabbit might. You never know.
I was just astonished, I must say.
Yeah.
I thought it was very charming.
It certainly is. Well, Kate, charming is exactly what it is talking to you again. Great to hear how well you're doing and the new book after you've gone. And, of course, the other thing you've got planned coming up as well. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. It's been great chatting to you again.
It's a delight and a pleasure. Thank you so much, Barry.
Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Kay Kendall. And we've been talking about her books, Desolation Row, Rainy Day Woman, and of course, After You Gone, her new one, which goes back from the 60s and 60s, 70s, back to the 20s. It's great stuff. The books, look for her on Amazon, look for her at... Austin Starr, AUSTIN, and STARRRR at the end for the Austin Starr. Look for the books there. Great stuff. Love. You see what we mean about the covers when you see that. Great stuff. And a lot of people enjoy it. Like a good mystery, these are the ones for you. Well, that's it. I will be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, I have one thing left to say. Don't forget.